This is the April 4 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett at agmarket.net. He's out of Windsor, Illinois. Aaron Curtis joins us from Midco in Bloomington, Illinois. And Ellen Dearden is here from Ag Review. She's in Morton, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online at willag.org or in your favorite podcast applications. And if you prefer to use YouTube as podcast has been added to YouTube Music or just YouTube directly, you can find us now in the FarmDoc YouTube site at youtube.com/@FarmDoc. Let's get a list of items to discuss for the day. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net, what's on your list?
Yeah, just interested to see what everyone thinks about, you know, the kind of rally potential we might have here this spring. Obviously, the reaction to the report wasn't what everyone was expecting maybe this week. And so very interested to hear what their opinions are on that, first of all. You know, and then second of all, just what kind of adjustments we might see with acreage. I think it's been a pretty hot topic this week that, you know, maybe for a variety of reasons, and I've got my own opinions there, but that we might see some adjustments moving forward, you know, into June based on when they did the survey for the intentions.
Aaron Curtis of Midco, your list includes other items?
Well, the grain stocks report sticks out to me from last Thursday, especially the on-farm piece of it, with corn stocks on farm, you know, up 975 million bushels versus the last year, about 24%. So, you know, that means the farmer's still holding a lot of grain here. We expected that, obviously, with the slow pace of sales so far. But what was that going to mean for both futures and basis here as we move one day closer to fall of 2024 harvest, Todd?
And finally, Ellen Dearden, your list.
I'd like to talk about the impact of avian flu having been found in dairy and beef cattle this week, and not just what that means for grain consumption, but also the consumer reaction to that news.
Let's take up Matt Bennett. The question you'd like an answer to first is, what do we think about rally potential for the spring? I'll put you on the spot to begin with, and then I'll ask Aaron and Ellen their thoughts as well. What do you think rally potential in the spring months might be for corn and soybeans?
Yeah, that's a great question, obviously, posed by someone that, you know, didn't know the answer 100%. So my thought process is this, Todd. The report, certainly friendly numbers versus expectations on Thursday when you look at corn, both when you look at acreage and then, you know, what were the stocks versus the traders' guess? And so actually had friendly numbers come out, but then you come out here this week and certainly didn't treat those like overly friendly numbers. But, you know, what kind of a rally potential might we see? Right now, our group is thinking, you know, maybe we could get a rally of somewhere in the 25 to 30 cent range. We don't really see a whole lot more happening than that as far as corn's concerned, you know, unless we get into, for instance, some talk about maybe a wetter spring. So I'm thinking, you know, maybe you push that front month or let's go to July. Maybe you push July. Oh, I don't know, 475, pushing maybe 480 is the potential. Now, as far as soybeans are concerned, you know, I could see a rally up and above, you know, easily $12, considering we're so close. But a lot of folks are asking more about new crop than old crop. I think it's no secret that the producer has more old crop corn than what they do old crop soybeans. So getting more questions on new crop soybeans. And I've got to think that we get to a level to where maybe we have a shot at selling some $12 beans out of the field here sometime between now and, middle of June.
Aaron Curtis, your thoughts on that question about rally potential yet this spring?
Well, it was nice to see the market up on Thursday, you know, obviously up 20 cents or so. And we did see quite a bit of farmer selling that day across the Midwest, more so on corn, obviously, than soybeans. And it was split a little bit, probably a little heavier old crop. But we did see a little bit of new crop again priced as well. So it was comforting to know that the market can go up double digits. Todd, we haven't seen a lot of that here this winter and spring. But, you know, seasonals continue to point for higher prices here as we move into the spring and summer. Funds continue to be or have a relatively large short. Now, they've lightened that up here over the last month or so, but still relatively short, especially going into the what is the whole of the U.S. growing season still. So, you know, typically we'll get something of concern. I don't know, you know, when or where that may be, but you would expect to get some sort of weather concern. But I think the concern for me for prices, and that's kind of to echo Matt's point, is that the farmer is still the big long in this market. What we saw on Thursday, farmer sold, market kind of faded there Monday, Tuesday. And I think that's going to be the continue to be the case. If we see these 20-30 cent rallies, I think they'll be quickly sold and be limiting. So absence of any major weather problem in Brazil, second corn crop leading to U.S. exports increasing, or a problem in the U.S., I think rallies are going to continue to be sold and be somewhat limited due to the fact that farmers still got so much old crop grain.
Ellen Dearden, I think what Aaron told us was that the market will rally, but it will simply go sideways in a range. Are you of a different view? And what is that rally potential from your point?
I think we'll see some pops even in this corn market. Keep in mind that these stocks for corn, not just with the on-farm, but the off-farm stocks too, I would call comfortable, ample, whatever you want to say. But the farmer is the large holder, and that's got to move at some point in time. I would agree with Matt that a July corn rally up into that 475 area is certainly going to be met with a lot of resistance. December up in the 495 area is going to be met with resistance. It's going to be awfully hard to get much of a corn rally going unless we would stay wet here in the Midwest going well into the end of May. And I don't really look for a weather person that's saying that the rain is going to continue that long. On the bean side of things, two overnight trading sessions in a row, we got July beans just fractionally off $12. And it seems to me that there probably is buying on stops up above that, but what can we get up to 12 and a half? Probably not. I think November beans have a better chance of getting above $12 and maybe staying there for a little bit. But I think that we need to make sure that we have orders to price new crop on those kinds of rallies. I would agree with Matt, there will be acreage adjustments made in the June report, but I don't think the rally will last into June.
I'll come back to those acreage adjustments in just a bit. I would like to stay, Ellen, with you for a moment, focusing on a short-term or old crop function, I believe, although it may roll into new crop. What impact do you think the H5N1 avian flu might have on the consumer as it's related to their buying habits for eggs, for poultry, for dairy now, and for beef?
Yep, it's going to be a limiting factor. I mean, I think the headline in the Washington Post was pretty negative for consumers. And consumers, if they are uncertain of what's going on with food supply, they're not going to buy that. Egg prices will drop, but I did notice that we had another big Texas flock of egg layers that is being culled. So that's really going to eat into corn demand as I see it. And maybe the commodity that will benefit from this situation will be pork, and we certainly have plenty of that to use.
Aaron Curtis, can you put that into the basis and futures talk that you wanted to have and what this means related to the on-farm stocks, which you pointed out were 24% bigger this year than last year?
Yeah, I think when you look at what that may mean, it's going to have to do with, you know, movement as on the cash side as we continue to move through the summer, right? Typically, that farmer grain on farm is not going to be carried into harvest. So you would say, it's in somewhat weaker hands, right, than the commercial grain. Most likely those farmers or producers are going to want to move that ahead of harvest, assuming that the crop in the U.S. progresses nicely and that, you know, insurance factor of holding old crop grain continues to subside and the new crop corn looks good and they want more focus on that. So it's probably going to be a limiting factor, you know, if we continue to see grain prices move higher and we see the farmer, start to sell that in bigger chunks. But probably the bigger concern, Todd, is going to be what that means for basis, right? As we continue to narrow this window, every day that goes by, farmer continues to be a large holder of grain, right? That's one day closer to harvest. And as we move towards the latter part of the summer and we're still holding relatively large on-farm stocks, that's probably going to translate into a weaker basis environment as we head into late August, early September, especially if the new crop, 2024 crop, looks pretty decent. So I think producers need to be mindful of what the impact on basis could be if we're trying to move a bunch of grain in a small window.
Matt Bennett, can you give me the mindset, as you might see it, of a farmer with grain in the bin? I'm not so certain that they're very worried about compounding interest, relatively speaking, each and every month that those bushels set there. However, they do need working capital. What kind of position are they in today? Can they manage to hold through July easily enough? And if they can, should they?
Well, I think that the producer overall, you know, made good money in 21 and 22. That's no secret. As far as 23 is concerned, it's a little more of a challenging year. But 24, of course, looks like it could be more challenging yet. So, you know, what's the producer's mindset on grain stored in the bin? And I think it's pretty typical, you know, that we're going to kind of wait this thing out and hope we can catch a break. The thing that is frustrating, though, as your question alluded to, is that, you know, it does cost a fair amount of money to hold on to this grain. If you've got any money borrowed at all, you know, even if it's in your bin at home, it's running around 3 cents a bushel. So just to understand what that cost factor looks like, understanding what Aaron's talked about, you know, you got 5 billion bushels in the farmer's hands right now. And so the problem is that's got to make its way to town sooner or later. That is going to be a challenge on rallies that I think that we have to understand. And so, you know, if you're a producer holding on a significant chunk of grain, should you hold on to it into the month of July? And I think from a historical standpoint, that just doesn't work all that great. I don't know that that would be my recommendation. You know, if a person wants to hold on to maybe some ownership, I think they could do so with a limited risk type situation on paper. I don't know that I want to do this penny for penny. And I know a lot of people say, I don't want to take a bunch of risk. But I'll tell you what, you got 100,000 bushels of corn at home, you're taking all kinds of risks. So we've got to be careful here to hold on to this corn too long, in my opinion.
Let's talk a little bit about the demand side of this, Ellen. Of course, you've discussed the potential impact of bird flu on consumers. I don't know whether you've thought about what that means for total consumption in the feed and residual category. And that comes out, of course, in June as well, the next time around, as well as the acreage numbers. And then how's the export market faring? Are we worried about China wanting a lower price for corn in the world, or a higher price for corn, I'm sorry, in their part of the world, and trying to keep imports from coming in? And then as well, how is ethanol demand holding up? So it's kind of the whole suite of demand across the board for corn.
Export demand for corn, even though export bookings on Thursday morning were not very stellar. Export bookings are well ahead of a year ago, and exports have been good. However, we're looking at normal buyers of corn. Japan and Mexico are the big buyers of corn, and they are the ones that are in there every week doing buying. We do have Japan typically comes in and buys during the month of April, so I would expect that maybe that will dry up in the month of May, something along that line. feed use probably is going to be scaled back, both on the poultry side, but also on the dairy side. Not a big factor on dairy, but a huge factor on poultry. Beef cattle, if that would, if the bird flu would expand further up into the central plains, we could see beef cattle, feed use for beef cattle really drop sharply. Ethanol demand has remained good. Ethanol margins, although off the winter highs, are still good. We are seeing the Peak and Peoria area, pretty decent demand, and that's where the basis has remained rather firm, is on the ethanol side, not on the export side.
Matt Bennett, will farmers change their acreage going into the springtime in order to try to make more money from the ground they have access to?
Oh, I'll tell you, Todd, here's the thing about acreage. You know, whenever they did this survey, it was as of March 1st. We really hadn't started the rally yet. You know, the whole month of February was basically the doldrums. And I've got to think that the mentality of the farmer on March 1st was about as low as what we've seen in a long time. Now, we know that sentiment certainly got better through the month of March, which makes sense because we've seen a rally. So is 90 an artificially low number, I think, would be the question for me. And I think, yes, maybe it's a little bit of an artificially low number. Now, if you've got swing acres, though, and you haven't put anhydrous on, I don't see with the cost of production the way it sits today, and the price of December corn at 473, I don't see any acres switching over, so to speak. If they do anything, I'm not so sure some guys might decide, maybe, and gals might decide that they want to actually plant some more beans than corn. Now, I understand bean price isn't exactly something to write home about, 1183, but the math actually works better for beans versus corn. So I think the overriding question, hey, do we pick up acres from 90? I think there's a possibility we do. I just don't think that it's going to be due to switching. I think it's going to be due to the fact that this report is a really tough report to gauge. You know, if you talk to Lance, for instance, you talk to anybody involved with USDA, this is a tough report for them, and they don't necessarily love this when it's entirely survey-based. Of course, they're trying to outguess whether maybe some of us are sandbagging, but bottom line is, I think that you could see a few more acres on June planted acres just simply due to when that question was asked. I just don't think it's going to be substantial by any means. 91 would be my max today, but that's just a guess.
Lance is Lance Honig, of course, the chief of the fields branch at NASS and responsible for the surveys. And he watches the numbers. I talked with Joe Jansen, agricultural economist from the U of I, for the Thursday closing market report. You can find that online at willag.org or in your podcast applications. He looked back historically and said, this number actually really is pretty good most of the time. If there are changes, generally it is a downward push in acreage, and that would be due to the inability to plant acres as opposed to anything else. And an upward push doesn't really change very much. He did remind me that while there were 6 million acres of principal crop acres that sort of disappeared from one year to the next, that's not unusual exactly. There's about a 10 million acre swing there. In corn and soybeans, there was about a million acres in both that he thought were missing from one year to the next. Ellen Dearden, when you think about what farmers will do, will they add acres going into June?
My observation is that I think the I states are pretty well set, and the fringe acres or the fringe parts of the Corn Belt are probably open for grabs. However, you got to keep in mind when we talk about ability to make money with $4.70 corn, that, for instance, you know, we're thinking 200 and 230 bushel corn, but in a lot of these fringe acres, they're looking at 180 bushel corn or 160 bushel corn. So I think that would leave them not that excited about planting more corn. I think the big takeaway that I saw on the report, the acres report last week, was how many bean acres are going to go into the Dakotas. And keep in mind, last year they had a lot of corn, and that was not a really good situation for them. They can move beans. They've got more processing plants. I think we'll see even more beans in the Dakotas than what this March report showed.
Aaron Curtis, I want you to turn your gaze to South America just for a little bit. And we'll stay with corn. We can talk about soybeans and what that crop looks like as they're finishing up there. However, the safrinha, or second crop corn, is their largest and mostly exportable corn crop. That which is in the southern part of Brazil, it has been dry, though they've been getting rainfall, and it appears they'll continue to get some rainfall. We know that if there is a drought in that second crop corn, that it can really push the price of corn higher in the United States, when it should be coming into the export market, which is, I think, about that June timeframe when we'd be really worried about what's happening in the U.S. as well, even if we have a good crop. On the other side of that, can that crop limit the upward movement in this marketplace if it turns out that it's actually a fairly normal-sized corn crop or second crop corn in Brazil?
Yeah, I think it can. I think it's going to be continued to watch here as we continue to move forward. We did see the, you know, the U.S. attaché in Brazil this week did lower their Brazil estimate on corn exports from 52 million metric tons down to 45. So that offers a little bit of hope maybe that there's an opportunity in the spring, early summer timeframe for U.S. exports to pick up a little bit. I think Ellen was right on when she talked about most of the corn exports right now have been routine, and Mexico is driving that, right, with them up 36% year over year due to their drought issues there in the southern part of Mexico. But I think it's still going to be an uphill battle for U.S. exports here the rest of the summer, because I think we got to also remind ourselves that Argentina is going to be in the mix when we look at FOB values this summer versus Brazil, Argentina, U.S., Argentina, and Brazil are offering corn out right now in that June, July timeframe at a competitive piece versus where we're at moving forward. So I think that's going to continue to be kind of a thorn in our side, assuming that second corn crop continues to move along. But, you know, what we didn't have last year was Argentina in the mix due to their dry weather. They're going to be in the mix. So that's going to offer another obstacle for us in terms of exports. So the export program, barring any sort of disruption in the production in Brazil, just doesn't look very rosy on the corn side here moving forward. And, you know, the beans isn't much better, Todd, because Brazil's continuing to export beans, and Argentina is going to slip in here in a couple months and take some remaining business as well. So I would expect both of our corn and soybean programs to be somewhat small here as we continue to move through the latter half of the marketing year.
I'd like to get a feel from each of you where you stand on this marketplace for both corn and soybeans. And I guess, Matt, I'll start with you in relatively simple. Are you bearish, neutral, or friendly? And maybe we should just, you can talk about old crop, but I'm concerned, I think, with new crop at the moment. Where do you see this market going?
Yeah, when you look at new crop, I mean, like Aaron said, there's not a whole lot going for this corn market, I think, on a global standpoint. We're pretty competitive. We've had decent exports, nothing that would make you think maybe we're going to raise them just yet. But, you know, overall, we're going to have enough corn in the world. We're going to have enough corn in the U.S. Last time we had two straight years of carryouts over 2 billion bushels was 2017 and 18. In 2017, 18, and 19, all 3 years, your average cash price was sub $4. So my thought process, if we plant, you know, 90 million or more acres, is that sometime this fall, you're probably going to see sub $4 corn on the board. I hate to say that. I just think that the likelihood for that is probably fairly strong if you have a decent crop. Now, obviously, we don't know what Mother Nature is going to do here, but that's what I would say, a more of a cautious tone. Over the short term, I think maybe you have an opportunity, like Ellen said, to maybe push 15, 20 cents higher on these corn. I think I'd be using that opportunity to at least hedge off some risk. On soybeans, I'm probably just as concerned, if not more. I think we'll get an opportunity above $12, but I'm not so sure that it's going to be real long lived. And I think the long term implications for beans is that we could see beans a dollar lower from here fairly easily. So I think opportunities that we see this spring, maybe you get a little bit more wet weather. Maybe there's some enthusiasm to get started up. If that's the case, and I'd certainly be setting floors in place at the very least, you know, and then protecting myself just in case we see these prices fall. Because if we look historically, the kind of stocks numbers we're looking at, we're probably trading a little too high right now.
Ellen Dearden, bearish, neutral, or bullish?
I'm pretty neutral right here, short term on the corn. I do have some cycle lows coming the middle of April in corn, the 20-week low. Looks pretty likely to be coming then. I would certainly use April, May rallies, a seasonal type rally to get new crop well priced. Really use that same time frame on the beans as well. Although I think that the beans will see some spiky action yet this spring.
And Aaron Curtis.
Neutral to slightly friendly here near term. I still think we'll see a seasonal bounce like Ellen mentioned. I just don't see the funds holding this large net short position all the way to the beginning of the growing season. I think it probably hangs in here in this 250 net short here through April. But then I think as we get into May, we'll have a little bit of opportunity to see that position lighten up a little bit, which should create a little bit of an opportunity in that second half of May, early June timeframe, which does coordinate with the seasonal pretty closely. But I think longer term, right, as you move into the fall, you got to be somewhat bearish, right? If we throw another decent crop in here, the carryout looks to continue to grow on both corn and soybeans. So assuming normal weather here in the United States and finishing up in South America, I think we see prices lower than where we are today. I think the gap area in November beans piques my interest up around that 1245 area. It sure feels like that's an area that we may try to go and fill here as we move through this seasonal high period. But I would say that 1250 area in November beans would be a target to increase risk management if you haven't done much on the sell side. And up in that 490 to 495 area, if we get this 20-cent bounce on Dease corn, I think risk management this year in 2024 is going to be extremely important, assuming normal weather.
We have not touched on biofuels. I'll let you do that if you want, but I would like a final word from each of you. The biofuels, of course, would be renewable diesel, as well as SAF or sustainable aviation fuel, alcohol to jet in particular from ethanol. Matt Bennett, any final word from you?
Yeah, I just think that you probably, like these guys have said, I think we could see some seasonal bounce in here. Got an opportunity, I would say, over the next few weeks, but I'd be quite cautious as to get bullish on an upward move, which is psychologically what we tend to do. As far as renewables go, I don't know what this GREET standard is going to come out at, but I know there's a lot of angst and concern, that corn-based ethanol is going to have to jump through too many hoops, that it's going to be a big player just yet. So renewables certainly is going to have challenges as it grows. But I think we'll continue to see strong demand coming from what we see is a pretty decent crush moving forward. Margins have been rough here lately, but again, there's going to be growing pains there.
Aaron Curtis, your final word?
Yeah, I continue to sell balances here from the risk management side, especially if you continue to have a greater share of whole crop than you feel comfortable with or don't want to talk about or admit to at this point. But if you still got corn on the farm, right, and you're looking as we head into the summer, I'd be very careful on what that may mean for grain prices and basis here as we move through the summer. So definitely have a plan here through this spring time frame to lighten up some of that ownership if you still have on farm with the sure possibility that, right, everybody's trying to move grain here late summer, right, in a limited time window, and it may not be the best scenario in terms of basis.
And Ellen Dearden of Ag Review.
Corn will move because of time rather than because of price, because most growers that I talk to plan to hold corn, old crop corn, into the summer. I believe they will have missed the boat for a seasonal rally and probably for an early summer rally because they want to hold it into, I know that there's problems with new crop, so I should hold my old crop. Not a good plan.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org or search Commodity Week out in your favorite podcast applications. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Matt Bennett from agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, Aaron Curtis at Midco in Bloomington, Illinois, and Ellen Dearden of AgReview. She's in Morton, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.